with my things, touching my torn tights and my half-used eyeliner pencil. Why did the thought make me want to cry? I was sitting on the bed, head in my hands, and thinking about the contents of the minibar when the phone rang. A couple of seconds later, as I crawled across the duvet to pick up the receiver, there was a knock on the door. I picked up the phone. Hello?
Hello, Miss Blacklock?
It was Carla. Yes, there's someone at the door. Should I answer it?
Yes. Yes, please do. It is our head of security, Johan Nielsen. I will leave you now with him, Miss Blacklock, but please do call me at any time if you need any further assistance.
There was a click, and the line went dead. And the knock on the door came again. I belted my toweling robe more securely and went to open it. Outside was a man I hadn't seen before, dressed in some kind of uniform. I don't know what I was expecting, something policeman-like. This was more like a nautical uniform, closer to a purser or something. He was about 40 or thereabouts, and tall enough to have to stoop as he stepped through the doorway. His hair was rumpled, like he'd only just got out of bed, and his eyes so startlingly blue that it looked almost as if he was wearing coloured contacts. I was staring at them when I realized suddenly that he was holding out a hand.
"Hello. You must be Miss Blacklock, I presume."
His English was very good, just a faint trace of a Scandinavian accent, so slight he might almost have been Scottish or Canadian.
"My name is Johan Nielsen. I am head of security on the Aurora. I understand you've seen something that disturbed you."
"Yes," I said firmly, suddenly painfully aware of the fact that I was in a dressing gown with my mascara halfway down my cheeks, while he was fully and professionally dressed. I tightened the belt again, nervously this time. "Yes, I saw, heard, something thrown overboard. I think it was, it must have been a body."
"You saw or heard?"
Nielsen said, cocking his head to one side. "I heard a splash, a very loud splash. It was quite clearly something very big falling overboard, or being pushed. And then I ran to the balcony and I saw something, a body, it looked like, disappearing under the waves." Nielsen's expression was grave but guarded, and as I spoke, his frown deepened. "And there was blood on the glass wall of the balcony," I added. His lips tightened at that, and he gave a short nod towards the veranda door.
"Your balcony?"
"The blood? No, next door."
"Can you show me?"
I nodded, pulled the belt again, and watched as he undid the latch of the veranda door. Outside, the wind had picked up, and it was very cold. I led the way out into the narrow space, which felt painfully small now with Nielsen's bulk beside me. He seemed to take up all the room there was, and more. But part of me was very glad he was there. I didn't think I could have brought myself to go out there on my own. "There!" I pointed over the privacy barrier that separated my veranda from that of Cabin 10. "Look, over there, you'll see what I mean." Nielsen peered over the barrier and then looked back at me, frowning slightly.
"I don't see where you mean. Could you show me?"
"What do you mean? It was a big smear all down the glass." He edged backwards, extending a hand towards the barrier by way of invitation, and I pushed past him to peer over. My heart was pounding in spite of myself. I didn't expect to see the murderer still there, nor to get a fist in my face or a bullet fly past my ear. But it felt horribly vulnerable to peer over the wall, not knowing what I might find on the other side. But what I found was nothing. No murderer crouched to spring. No smear of blood. The glass barrier shone in the moonlight, clean, innocent of so much as a fingerprint. I turned back to Nielsen, knowing that my face must be stiff with shock. I shook my head, tried to find the words. He watched me, something sympathetic in his blue eyes. It was the sympathy that stung more than anything else.
"It was there," I said angrily. "He's obviously wiped it off."
"He?"
"The murderer! The fucking murderer, of course!"
"There's no need to swear, Miss Blacklock," he said mildly and went back inside the cabin. I followed him and he carefully shut and latched the door behind me and then stood, his hands by his side, as if waiting for me to say something. I could smell his cologne, not an unpleasant smell, faintly woody, but suddenly the spacious room felt oppressively small.
"What?"
I said at last, trying and failing not to make the word sound aggressive.
"I told you what I saw. Are you saying I'm lying?"
"Let's go next door," he said diplomatically. I yanked the toweling belt tighter still, so tight now I could feel it digging into my stomach, and followed him, barefoot, into the corridor. He gave one short knock at the door of cabin 10, and then, when there was no answer, produced a passkey from his pocket and opened the door. We stood in the doorway. Nielsen said nothing, but I could feel his presence at my back as I gazed, open-mouthed, at the room. It was utterly empty. Not just of people, but of everything. There were no suitcases, no clothes, no cosmetics in the bathroom. Even the bed was stripped back to the mattress.
"There was a girl," I said at last, my voice unsteady. I shoved my hands in the pockets of the bathrobe so that he wouldn't see how my fingers were clenched into fists. "There was a girl in this room. I talked to her. I spoke to her. She was here."
Nielsen said nothing. He walked through the silent, moonlit suite and opened the door of the veranda, then looked outside, inspecting the glass barrier with almost insulting conscientiousness. But I could see from here there was nothing. The glass gleamed in the moonlight, misted faintly with ocean spray, but otherwise quite untouched.
"She was here,"
I repeated, hearing and hating the edge of hysteria in my voice.
"Why won't you believe me?"
"I didn't say that I don't believe you."
Nielsen came back into the room and latched the veranda window. Then he walked me through the cabin door and closed and locked it behind us.
"You don't have to,"
I said bitterly. My own door was still open and he escorted me inside.
"But I tell you, she was there. She lent me..."
"Oh." Something suddenly struck me and I ran to the bathroom.
"She lent me a mascara. God damn it, where is it?"
I was rummaging through the carefully set out cosmetics, but it wasn't there.
Where had it gone? "It's here,"
I said desperately.
"I know it is."
I looked around wildly, and something caught my eye. A flash of shocking pink behind the retractable shaving mirror at the side of the basin. I pulled it out, and there it was. An innocent little pink tube with a green cap.
"There!"
I brandished it triumphantly at him, like a weapon. Nielsen took a step back and then took the mascara gently from my hand.
"I see," he said. "But with respect, Miss Blacklock, I'm not sure what this proves, apart from the fact that you borrowed a mascara from someone today."
"What does it prove?" "It proves she was really there. It proves she existed."
"It proves you saw a girl, yes, but..."
"What do you want?"
I interrupted desperately.
"What more do you want from me?
I've told you what I heard, what I saw. I've told you there was a girl in that cabin, and now she's gone. Look on the manifest. There's a guest missing. Why aren't you more concerned?
That cabin is empty, he said gently.
I know, I shouted. And then, seeing Nielsen's face, I made a huge, concentrated effort to get myself under control. I know. That's what I've been trying to tell you, for God's sake.
No,
he said. Still with that same quiet gentleness, the gentleness of a big man with nothing to prove.
This is what I'm trying to explain, Miss Blacklock. It has always been empty. There was no guest in that cabin. There never has been.
Chapter 11. I stared at him. Open-mouthed. What do you mean? I managed at last. What do you mean, no guest?
The cabin is empty, he said. It was reserved for another guest, an investor named Ernst Solberg. But he pulled out at the last minute, personal reasons, I understand.
So the girl I saw... She wasn't supposed to be there?
Perhaps she was a member of staff or a cleaner.
She wasn't. She was getting dressed. She was staying there. He said nothing. He didn't have to. The question was obvious. If she was staying there, where was all her stuff? Someone could have taken it out, I said weakly. Between seeing me and you coming?
Really?
Nielsen's voice was quiet. His question not skeptical, not mocking, just uncomprehending. He sat down on the sofa, the springs squeaking beneath his bulk, and I sank onto the bed and put my face in my hands. He was right. There was no way someone could have cleared the room. I didn't know exactly how much time had elapsed between me calling Carla and Nielsen appearing at my door, but there was no way it was more than a few minutes. 5, 7 at the outside. Probably not even that. Whoever was in there might have had time to wipe the blood off the glass, but that was it. There was no way they could have emptied the entire cabin. What could they have done with the stuff? I would have heard it if they had tipped it over the side. And there simply hadn't been time for them to pack it up and take it down the corridor. Shit, I said at last, into my hands. Shit.
Miss Blacklock,
Nielsen said slowly, and I had a sudden premonition that I was not going to like his next question.
Miss Blacklock, how much did you have to drink? Last night.
I looked up, letting him see my ravaged makeup and the fury in my sleep-bleared eyes. I beg your pardon?
I simply asked.
There was no point in denying it. There were enough people who'd seen me at dinner last night, knocking back champagne, then wine, then after-dinner shots, to blow a hole a mile wide in any claim that I was sober. Yes, I was drinking, I said, nastily. But if you think that half a glass of wine turns me into some hysterical drunk who can't tell reality from fantasy, you've got another think coming. He said nothing to that, but his gaze travelled to the bin beside the minibar, where a number of whiskey and gin miniatures and a considerably smaller quantity of tonic cans were stacked up. There was a silence. Nielsen didn't ram home his point, but he didn't need to. Bastard room cleaners. I may have been drinking, I said through clenched teeth. But I wasn't drunk. Not like that. I know what I saw. Why would I make it up?
He seemed to accept that and nodded wearily.
Very well, Miss Blacklock.
He rubbed a hand over his face, and I heard his blonde stubble rasp against his palm. He was tired, and I noticed, suddenly and incongruously, that his uniform jacket was buttoned up askew, with an orphan buttonhole at the bottom.
Look, it is late, you are tired.
You're tired!
I shot back with more than a touch of malice, but he only nodded, without rancor.
Yes, I am tired. I think there is nothing we can do now until the morning.
A woman has been thrown...
There is no proof,
he said, louder, his voice cutting over mine, and for the first time there was exasperation in his tone.
I'm sorry, Miss Blacklock,
he said more quietly.
I should not have contradicted you. But I don't feel there is sufficient evidence to wake the other passengers at this point. Let us both get some sleep.
And you can sober up, was the unspoken translation.
And we will try to resolve this in the morning. Perhaps if I take you to meet the ship's staff, we can track down this girl that you saw in the cabin. It is evident that she was not a passenger, correct?
She wasn't at the dinner last night, I admitted. But what if she was a staff member? What if someone's missing and we're wasting time in raising the alarm?
I'll speak to the captain and the purser now. Let them know the situation. But there are no staff unaccounted for that I am aware of. If there were, someone would have noticed. This is a very small ship with a tight-knit crew. It would be hard for someone to go missing undetected, even for a few hours.
I just think, I began, but he cut me off, politely and firmly this time.
Miss Blacklock, I will not wake up sleeping staff and passengers for no good reason. I'm sorry. I will inform the captain and the purser that they will take whatever action they see fit. In the meantime, perhaps you could give me a description of the girl you saw, and I can double-check the passenger manifest and arrange that all the off-duty staff members who match the description are in the staff restaurant for you to meet tomorrow after breakfast.
All right, I said sulkily. I was beaten. I knew what I had seen, what I'd heard, but Nielsen was not budging. That much was plain. And what could I do, out here in the middle of the ocean?
So, he prompted. She was how old? How tall? Was she Caucasian, Asian, black?
Late 20s, I said. About my height. White, very pale skin, in fact. She spoke English.
With an accent?
Nielsen put in. I shook my head.
No, she was English.
Or if she wasn't, she was completely bilingual.
She had long, dark hair. I can't remember what colour eyes. Dark brown, I think. I'm not certain. Slimish build. She was just pretty. That's all I remember.
Pretty?
Yes, pretty. You know, nice features. Clear skin, she was wearing makeup, lots of eye makeup. Oh, and she was wearing a Pink Floyd T-shirt.
Nielsen wrote it all down solemnly, and then rose, the spring squeaking in protest, or perhaps relief.
Thank you, Miss Blacklock. And now I think we should both get some sleep.
He rubbed his face, looking for all the world like a big blonde bear dragged out of hibernation.
What time should I expect you tomorrow?
What time would suit you? 10? 10:30?
Earlier, I said. I won't sleep. Not now.
I was buzzing, and I knew I would never get back to sleep.
Well, my shift starts at 8. Is that too early?
That's perfect, I said firmly. He walked to the door, suppressing a yawn as he did, and I watched as he lumbered off along the corridor towards the stairs. Then I shut and double-locked the door and went and lay on the bed, staring at the sea. The waves were dark and slick in the moonlight, heaving themselves up like the backs of whales, then slipping back down, and I lay and felt the boat rise and fall with the swell. I would never sleep. I knew that. Not with my blood ringing in my ears and my heart beating an angry staccato rhythm in my chest. I would never relax. I was furious, but I was not sure why. Because a woman's body was, even now, floating down into the black darkness of the North Sea, probably never to be found? Or was part of it something smaller, baser, the fact that Nielsen had not believed me? "Maybe he's right," the nasty little voice in my head whispered. Pictures flitted across my mind's eye, me cowering in the shower because of a door blowing shut in the wind, defending myself against a non-existent intruder by attacking Judah.
"Are you completely sure? You're not exactly the most reliable witness. And at the end of the day, what did you actually see?"
"I saw the blood," I told myself. "And a girl is missing. Explain that." I switched the light out and drew the cover across myself. But I didn't sleep. Instead, I lay on my side, watching the sea, rising and falling in strange hypnotic silence outside the thick, storm-proof panes. And I thought, there is a murderer on this boat, and no one knows but me. Chapter 12.
"Miss Blacklock!"
The knock came again, and I heard a passkey in the door, and the bang as the door opened a centimetre, and the security chain pulled taut.
"Miss Blacklock, it's Johan Nielsen. Are you okay? It's 8 o'clock. You asked me to call you."
"What?" I struggled up onto my elbows, my head pounding with the effort. Why the hell had I asked to be called at 8 o'clock?
"One sec," I managed.
My mouth was dry, as if I'd swallowed ashes, and I reached for the glass of water by my bed and choked some down. As I did, the memory of last night came flooding back, the noise that had woken me in the night, the blood on the veranda glass, the body, the splash. I swung my legs out of bed and felt the boat shift and lurch beneath me, and I felt suddenly and violently nauseous. I ran to the bathroom and just managed to get myself positioned over the bowl in time for the retching heave of last night's dinner against clean white porcelain.
"Miss Blacklock?"
"Go away."
The words didn't make it out of my mouth, but maybe the sound of splashing vomit conveyed the sentiment, because the door shut very quietly and I was able to stand up and examine myself without an audience. I looked awful. The dregs of my eye makeup were smudged across my cheeks. I had sick in my hair and my eyes were bloodshot and red-rimmed. The bruise on my cheek just added to the whole impression. The sea was rougher this morning, and everything around the sink shifted and clinked. I pulled my dressing gown around me, went back into the cabin, and pulled the door open, the tiniest crack, barely enough to see through.
"I've got to take a shower," I said tersely.
"Do you mind waiting?" And then I shut the door. Inside the bathroom, I flushed the toilet and wiped around the rim, trying to destroy all traces of my vomit. But when I straightened, it was not my pale, ravaged face that caught my eye, but the tube of Maybelline mascara, standing sentinel by the sink. As I stood, clutching the vanity table, my breath coming short and sharp, the ship gave another roll, and everything on the countertop shifted and wobbled, and the tube fell with a tiny crack and rolled into the bin. I reached in and pulled it out, holding it in my fist. It was the only tangible evidence that the girl had existed, that I wasn't going mad. 10 minutes later, I was dressed in jeans and a crisp white shirt, pressed by whoever unpacked my case, and my face was pale but clean. I pulled back the security chain and opened the door to find Nielsen waiting patiently in the corridor, talking on a radio. He looked up when he saw me and shut it off.
"I'm very sorry, Miss Blacklock," he said. "Perhaps I should not have woken you, but you were so insistent last night."
"It's fine," I said through gritted teeth. I didn't mean to sound quite so curt, but if I opened my mouth too much, I might be sick again. Thank God the movement of the boat provided an alibi for my queasy stomach. Being a bad sailor was not exactly chic, but it was less unprofessional than being considered an alcoholic.
"I have spoken to the staff," Nielsen said. "No one has been reported missing, but I suggest you come down to the staff quarters and see if the woman you spoke to is there. It may put your mind at rest."
I was about to protest that she wasn't staff, not unless the cleaners valeted rooms wearing Pink Floyd t-shirts and not much else, but then I shut my mouth. I wanted to see below decks for myself. I followed him along the lurching corridor to a small service door by the stairwell. It was fitted with a keypad lock into which he quickly tapped a 6-digit code, and the door swung open. From the outside, I would have assumed the door hid a cleaning cupboard, but in fact there was a small, dimly lit landing and a flight of narrow stairs leading down into the depths of the ship. As we descended, I realized, unsettlingly, that we must now be below the waterline, or very near it. We emerged into a cramped corridor that had a completely different feel to the passenger part of the ship. Everything was different. The ceiling was lower, the air was several degrees hotter, and the walls closer together and painted a dingy shade of beige. The lights were dim fluorescents with a strange high-frequency flicker that made your eyes tire almost at once. Doors opened off to the left and right, 8 or 10 cabins crammed into the same space as 2 above. We passed one door that was ajar, and I saw a windowless cabin lit by the same graying fluorescent light, and an Asian woman sitting on a bunk inside pulling on her tights, her head and shoulders cramped in the narrow space beneath the bunk above. She looked nervously up as Nielsen passed, and then at the sight of me her face froze like a panicked rabbit in the headlights. For a moment she just sat motionless, and then with a convulsive start she reached out with her foot and kicked the door shut, the sound as loud as a gunshot in the confined space. I felt myself blush like a peeping Tom caught in the act, and hurried after Nielsen's retreating back.
"This way,"
Nielsen said over his shoulder, and we turned into a door marked Staff Mess. This room was larger at least, and I felt the growing sense of claustrophobia lift slightly. The ceiling was still low and there were still no windows, but the room opened out into a small dining room, like a miniature version of a hospital canteen. There were only 3 tables, each seating maybe 6 people, but the formica surfaces, steel grab rails, and the powerful smell of institutional cooking combined to underline the difference between this deck and the one above. Camilla Lidman was seated alone at one of the tables, drinking coffee and going through some kind of spreadsheet on a laptop. Across the room, 5 girls were sitting around another eating breakfast pastries. They looked up as we entered.
"Hey, Johan,"
one of them said, followed with something in Swedish or maybe Danish, I wasn't sure.
"Let's speak in English, please,"
Nielsen said,
"as we have a guest present. Miss Blacklock is trying to trace a woman she saw in the next door cabin, number 10, Palmgren. The woman she saw was white, with long dark hair in her late 20s or early 30s, and she spoke good English.
Well, there's me and Birgitta, said one of the girls with a smile, nodding at her friend opposite. My name is Hanny, but I don't think I've been in Palmgren. I work behind the bar mainly. Birgitta?
But I was shaking my head. Hanny and Birgitta both had pale skin and dark hair, but neither was the girl from the cabin, and even though Hanny's English was excellent, she had a noticeable Scandinavian accent.
I'm Carla, Miss Blacklock, said one of the two blonde girls. We met yesterday, if you recall, and we spoke on the phone last night.
Of course, I said absently, but I was too busy scanning the faces of the other girls to pay proper attention.
Carla and the fourth girl at the table were both blonde, and the fifth had Mediterranean colouring and very short hair, almost a pixie cut. More importantly, none of them looked like my memory of that vivid, impatient face.
It's not any of you, I said. Is there anyone else who fits the description? What about the cleaners, or the sailing crew?
Birgitta frowned and said something to Hanny in Swedish. Hanny shook her head and spoke in English.
The crew are mainly men. There's one woman, but she's red-headed, and perhaps 40 or 50, I think. But Ivona, one of the cleaners, would match her description. She's Polish.
I'll get her, Carla said. She got up with a smile and squeezed out from behind the table.
There's Eva, Nilsson said thoughtfully as Carla left the room. She's one of the spa therapists, he added to me.
She's up in the spa, I think, said Hanny. Setting up for the day, but she's in her late 30s at least, maybe 40s.
We'll go and speak to her after this, Nilsson said.
Don't forget Ulla,
the pixie-haired girl spoke up for the first time.
Ah, yes, Nilsson said. Is she on duty? Ulla is one of the stewards for the forward cabins and the Nobel suite, he added to me.
The girl nodded.
Yes, but I think she'll be coming off shortly.
Miss Blacklock, said a voice from behind me, and I turned to see Carla presenting a colleague, a small, dumpy woman in her 40s with dyed black hair showing threads of grey at the roots.
This is Ivona.
I came to help,
Ivona said in a heavy Polish accent.
There is a problem?
I shook my head. I'm so sorry. I wasn't sure whether to address the answer to Ivona, Nilsson, or Carla.
You're not the woman I saw. But I just want to say, there's no question of this woman being in trouble. It's not that she's stolen something or anything like that. I'm worried about her. I heard a scream.
A scream?
Hanny's narrow eyebrows nearly disappeared into her fringe, and she exchanged a look with Carla, who opened her mouth to say something, but just then from behind us, Camilla Lidman spoke for the first time.
I am sure none of the crew is the woman you're looking for, Miss Blacklock.
She came across the room to stand by the table, putting her hand on Hanny's shoulder.
They would have said, if they had any cause for alarm. We are a very... what's the expression? Very tightly knitted.
Very close, Carla said. Her gaze flickered to Camilla Lidman and back to me, and she smiled, although her raised, overplucked brows gave the expression an oddly unconvincing, anxious air.
We are a very happy crew.
Never mind, I said. I could see I wasn't going to get anything out of these girls. The mention of the scream had been a mistake. They had closed ranks now. And maybe speaking to them with Camilla and Nilsson present had been an error too.
Don't worry, I'll go and speak to Eva, was it? And Ulla. Thank you for talking to me. But if you hear anything, anything at all, I'm in cabin 9, Linnaeus. Please do come and see me, any time.
We have heard nothing, said Hanny firmly. But of course we will let you know if that changes. Have a wonderful day, Miss Blacklock.
Thanks, I said. As I turned, the ship lurched, making the girls give little laughing shrieks of alarm and clutch hold of their coffees. I stumbled and would have fallen if Nielsen hadn't grabbed my arm.
Are you all right, Miss Blacklock?
I nodded, but actually his grip had hurt, leaving my arm aching. The shock of the movement had sent a stabbing pain through my head, and I wished I'd taken an aspirin before heading out.
I enjoy that the Aurora is a smaller ship, not one of these Caribbean monsters, but it does mean that you can feel the impact of a big wave more than you might on a larger vessel. Are you sure you're okay?
I'm fine, I said shortly, rubbing my arm. Let's go and speak to Eva.
First, let us take a detour via the kitchen,
Nielsen said.
Then we can head up to the spa to speak to Eva, and finally we can finish in the breakfast room.
He had a list of staff in his hand and was crossing off names.
That should be everyone, apart perhaps from two members of the sailing crew and a few cabin stewards we can find at the end.
Fine, I said tersely. In truth, I wanted to get out from the claustrophobic walls and the airless corridors, away from the grey lighting and the feeling of being hemmed in, trapped below the waterline. I had a brief, horrible image of the ship striking something, water flooding the confined space, mouths gasping for the fleeing scraps of air. But I could not give up now. To do that would be to admit defeat, to admit that Nielsen was right. I followed him down a corridor towards the nose of the ship, feeling the floor shift and lurch beneath me, while the smell of cooking became stronger. There was bacon and hot fat, and the distinctive buttery tang of baking croissants, but also boiled fish and gravy, and something sweet. The combination brought a rush of saliva to my mouth, not in a good way, and I gritted my teeth again and grabbed hold of the rail as the ship heaved up another wave and dropped into the trough, leaving my stomach behind. I was just wondering whether it was too late to ask Nielsen if we could turn back when he stopped at a steel door with two small glass windows in and pushed it open. White-hatted heads turned, their faces registering polite surprise as they saw me standing behind Nielsen.
Hej, alla,
Nielsen said, followed by something else in Swedish. He turned to me.
I'm sorry. All of the deck and hospitality staff speak English, but not all the cooks do. I'm just explaining why we're here.
There were smiles and nods from the staff, and one of the chefs came forward, his hand stuck out.
Hello, Miss Blacklock,
he said in excellent English.
My name is Otto Janssen. Any of my staff will be pleased to help, although they do not all speak good English. I can translate. What do you need to know?
But I couldn't speak. I could only gulp, staring down at his outstretched hand in the pale latex catering glove, while the blood hissed in my ears. I looked up into his friendly blue eyes and then back down at the glove, with dark hairs showing through, pressed against the rubber, and thought, I must not scream. I must not scream. Janssen looked down at his hand, as if to see what I was gaping at, and then laughed and pulled the glove off with his other hand.
So sorry. I forget I am wearing these. They are for catering, you know.
He threw the pale, flaccid glove into the bin, and then shook my limp, unresisting hand, his grip firm, his fingers warm and slightly dusty from the latex coating.
I'm looking for a girl, I said, knowing I was being abrupt, but too shaken to be more polite.
Dark-haired, about my age or a bit younger. Pretty, with pale skin. She didn't have an accent. She was either English or completely bilingual.
I'm sorry,
Janssen said regretfully, and he did look sorry.
I don't think any of my staff fit that description, though you are welcome to take a walk around and see if any of them are the girl you are looking for. I have only 2 female staff members, and neither speak very good English. Jamila is over by the serving hatch, and Ingrid is on salads behind the grill station there. But neither of them fit your description. Perhaps one of the stewards or waiting staff. I craned my head to see the 2 women he indicated, and saw that he was right. Neither was remotely like the girl I'd seen. Although she had her head bowed and her body hunched away from me, I was certain that Jamila was the Asian woman I'd seen in the cabin as we came down. She was Pakistani or Bangladeshi, I thought, and absolutely tiny, probably not even 5 foot tall. Ingrid, on the other hand, was Scandinavian and at least 14 stone, plus she had a good 6 inches on me. As I looked at her, she put her hands on her hips, squaring up to me almost aggressively, although I knew it was unfair to think that. It was her height that made the gesture seem threatening. "Never mind," I said. "Sorry for disturbing you."
"Tack, Otto,"
Nielsen said, and then made a joke in Swedish that set Otto laughing. He patted Nielsen on the back and said something that made Nielsen guffaw in return, a great belly laugh that set his stomach shaking. He raised his hand to the rest of the crew.
"Hey, da,"
he called, and then ushered me out into the corridor.
"I'm sorry about that,"
he said over his shoulder as he led the way towards the stairs.
"The official language of the boat is English, and it's policy that we don't speak other languages in front of our English guests, but I thought, under the circumstances..."
He trailed off, and I nodded. "It's fine. Better that everyone was comfortable and understood what they were being asked properly." We were passing the crew's cabins again, and I glanced in at the few open doors, shocked afresh at the dinginess of the cramped quarters. I couldn't imagine spending week after week, month after month in the windowless confines. Perhaps Nielsen felt my silence at his back, for he spoke again.
"They're a little small, aren't they? But there's only 12 or so staff on the boat, excluding the sailing crew, so we don't need much space. And I can tell you, they are better than much of the accommodation on rival ships."
I didn't say what I was thinking, that it was not the space itself that shocked, but the contrast with the light, airy rooms above. In truth, the rooms were no worse than those in plenty of cross-channel ferries I'd travelled on. In fact, they were more spacious than some, but it was the graphic illustration of the gap between the haves and have-nots that was upsetting. A modern upstairs-downstairs in action. "Does everyone share?" I asked, as we passed a darkened cabin where someone was getting dressed with the door ajar while their bunkmate snored. Nielsen shook his head.
"The junior staff share cabins, the cleaners and the younger stewards and so on, but all the senior staff have their own."
We had reached the staircase that led to the upper deck, and I made my way slowly up, following Nielsen's wide back and holding on to the grab rails. Nielsen opened the dividing door that separated the guests' part of the ship from the workers, and then turned to me as he shut the door behind us.
"I'm sorry that did not work out so well," he said. "I had hoped that one of the girls would be the woman you saw and put your mind at rest."
"Look," I rubbed my face, feeling the roughness of the healing scar on my cheek and the pressure headache that was beginning to build. "I'm not sure..."
"Let's press on and speak to Eva,"
Nielsen said firmly, and he turned and led the way along the corridor towards yet another set of stairs. The ship seemed to be making heavy going, lurching from one huge wave to another. I swallowed against the gush of spit in my mouth and felt the cold clamminess of sweat on my spine beneath my shirt. For a moment, I almost considered ducking back to my cabin. It wasn't only my head. I still had to finish reading the press pack and make a start on the piece Rowan would be expecting when I got back. I was horribly conscious that Ben, Tina, Alexander, and all the others were probably already making notes, filing pieces, googling Bulmer, and sorting out press shots. But then I steeled myself. If I wanted Nielsen to take me seriously, I had to go through with this. And as much as I wanted to climb the ladder at velocity, some things were more important. We found Eva in the spa reception, a beautiful, tranquil room on the upper deck, almost all glass, with long curtains that caught in the breeze as we opened the door. The glass walls looked out onto the deck, the light searingly bright after the beige warren of dimly lit rooms below. A striking, dark-haired woman in her 40s, with wide gold hoops in her ears, looked up as Nielsen and I entered.
"Johan," she said pleasantly, "what can I do for you? And this must be..."
"Lo Blacklock," I said, holding out my hand. I felt instantly better out of the confines of the staff quarters, the clammy nausea retreating in the sea breeze.
"Good morning, Miss Blacklock," she said, smiling.
I shook her hand, her grip firm, her fingers bony but strong. Her English was astonishingly good, almost as good as the girl in the cabins had been. But it wasn't her. She was much too old, her carefully moisturized skin betraying that slight weathering of a complexion that had seen a little too much sun.
"What can I do for you?"
"I'm sorry," I said. "I was looking for someone, and the girls below deck suggested it might be you, but it's not."
"Miss Blacklock saw a woman last night," Nielsen put in the cabin next to hers. "She was in her 20s, with long dark hair and pale skin. Miss Blacklock heard some noises that made her concerned, and we were trying to ascertain if it was a member of staff."
"I'm afraid it wasn't me," Eva said, but quite kindly. There was no trace of the slightly tribal defensiveness the girls downstairs had betrayed. She gave a little laugh.
"If I'm being honest, it's a long time since I was in my 20s.
Have you spoken to the Stewarts? Hanni and Birgitta both have dark hair and are around that age, and so does Ulla."
"Yes, we've spoken to them," Nielsen said, "and we're on our way to see Ulla now."
"She's not in any trouble," I said. "The woman, I mean. I'm worried for her. If you can think of anyone it might be..."
"I'm sorry not to be able to help," Eva said. She spoke directly to me, and she did look sorry, the most genuinely concerned of any of the people I had spoken to so far. There was a little frown between her beautifully plucked brows.
"I really am. If I hear anything..."
"Thank you," I said.
"Thanks, Eva,"
Nielsen repeated and turned to go.
"You're welcome," Eva said. She walked us to the door.
"I look forward to seeing you later, Miss Blacklock."
"Later?"
"At 11 a.m. It is the ladies' spa experience. In your press schedule?"
"Thanks," I said. "See you then." As I turned to leave, I thought guiltily of the unread pages of the press pack back in my cabin and wondered what else I might have missed. We left the spa via the exit to the deck. As the door swung back, it was wrenched out of my hand by the strong breeze, banging sharply against a rubber stand put there for the purpose. Nielsen closed it behind me, and I moved to the ship's rail, shivering in the wind.
"Are you cold?"
Nielsen shouted above the roar of the wind and the noise of the engines. I shook my head.
"No. I mean, yes, I am, but I need the fresh air."
"Are you still feeling unwell?"
"Not out here, but my head's aching."
I stood holding onto the cold, painted iron of the railing, and I leaned out, looking down past the glass-walled balconies of the cabins aft, down at the creaming waves of the ship's wake and the great expanse of sea further out, unimaginably deep and cold. I thought of the fathoms of swirling blackness beneath us, of the darkness and silence below, and how something, someone, might fall for days through those black depths,
to rest at last on a lightless seabed. I thought of the girl the night before, how easy it would be for someone, Nielsen, Eva, anyone, to just walk up behind me, give me a gentle push. I shuddered. What had happened? I couldn't have imagined it. The scream and the splash, maybe, but not the blood. I couldn't have imagined that. I took a huge lungful of the clean North Sea air, turned around and smiled determinedly at Nielsen, shaking my hair back where the wind had whipped it across my face. So, whereabouts are we?
International waters, Nielsen said. On our way to Trondheim, I believe.
Trondheim? I tried to think back to the talk the night before. I thought Lord Bulmer said we were going to Bergen first.
A change of plan, perhaps? I know that Lord Bulmer is very much hoping that you will all get a glimpse of the Northern Lights. Perhaps there are particularly good conditions tonight, so he wanted to hasten north. Or it might have been a suggestion of the captain. There may be climatic reasons why it's better to do the trip that way around. We have no fixed itinerary. We are very much able to cater to the whims of our passengers. It may be that someone at dinner last night was particularly anxious to see Trondheim.
What's in Trondheim?
Trondheim itself? Well, there is a famous cathedral, and parts of the city are very attractive, but it's mainly the fjords. That and the fact that the city is, of course, much further north than Bergen, so there's a better chance of seeing the aurora.
But it might be that we have to go further north still, to Bula, or even Tromsø.
At this time of year, it's still uncertain.
I see. For some reason, his words unsettled me. It was one thing to feel yourself part of an organized trip. It was quite another to realize you were a helpless passenger with someone else at the wheel.
Miss Blacklock.
Call me Lo, I interrupted. Please.
Lo, then.
Nielsen's broad, comfortable face looked pained.
I don't want you to think that I don't believe you, Lo. But in the cold light of day...
Am I still sure? I finished. He nodded. I sighed unhappily, thinking back to my doubts of the night before, and the way Nielsen's unspoken question echoed the unpleasant little nagging voice at the back of my skull. I twisted my fingers in the cloth of my top before I spoke. The truth is, I don't know. It was late, and you're right, I had been drinking. I could have been mistaken about the scream and the splash, even the blood. I guess it could have been a trick of the light, although I'm pretty sure of what I saw. But the woman in the cabin? There's no way I could have imagined her. I just couldn't. I saw her. I spoke to her. If she's not here, not on the ship, I mean, then where is she? There was a long silence.
Well, we haven't spoken to Ulla.
He said at last.
From your description, I'm not sure it's her, but we should rule it out at least.
He drew out his staff radio and began tapping at the buttons.
I don't know about you, but I could do with a coffee. So perhaps we could ask her to meet us in the breakfast room.
The breakfast room was the same room we had eaten dinner in last night. But the two large tables had been broken up into half a dozen smaller ones. When Nielsen pushed open the door, there was no one there, apart from a young waiter with corn-coloured hair swept into a side parting. He came forward to greet me with a smile.
Miss Blacklock, are you ready for breakfast?
Yes, please, I said vaguely, looking around the room. Where should I sit?
Anywhere you like.
He waved a hand at the empty tables.
Most of the other guests have chosen to breakfast in their cabins, perhaps by the window? Can I bring you tea, coffee?
Coffee, please, I said. Milk, no sugar.
And a cup for me, please, Bjorn,
Nilsson said. And then, over Bjorn's shoulder,
Ah, hello, Ulla.
I turned to see a stunningly beautiful girl with a heavy black bun walking across the dining room to our table.
Hello, Johan, she said.
Her accent clinched the matter, but I was sure even before she spoke that she wasn't the girl in the cabin. She was singularly beautiful, her skin against her black hair as white and clear as porcelain. The girl in the cabin had been vividly good-looking, but not that delicate classical loveliness, like a Renaissance painting. Also, Ulla must have been nearly 6 foot. The girl in the cabin had been around my height, nowhere near Ulla's. Nilsson gave me a questioning look, but I shook my head. Bjorn returned with 2 cups on a tray and a menu for me, and Nilsson cleared his throat.
Won't you have a cup with us, Ulla?
Thank you, she said, shaking her head so that her heavy bun swayed at the nape of her neck.
I've had breakfast already today, but I'll sit for a moment.
She slipped onto a chair opposite and looked at us both, smiling expectantly. Nilsson coughed again.
Miss Blacklock, this is Ulla. She's the stewardess for the forward cabins. So the Bulmers, the Jensens, Cole Lederer, and Owen White. Ulla, Miss Blacklock is looking for a girl that she saw yesterday and is anxious to trace. She's not on the passenger list, so we are thinking she may be a member of staff, but we have had no luck in finding her. Miss Blacklock, do you want to describe the girl you saw?
I ran through the brief description for what felt like the 100th time. Can you think of anyone? I was aware my voice had started to sound pleading. Anyone who would fit that description?
Well, I have dark hair, obviously, Ulla said with a laugh. But it was not me, so after that I am not so sure. There is Hani, she has dark hair, and Birgitta.
I've met them, I interrupted. It's not them. Anyone else? Cleaners? Sailing crew?
No. There's no one on the sailing crew who could fit that description, Ulla said slowly. On the staff there is also Aoife, but she is too old. Have you spoken to the kitchen staff?
Never mind. I was beginning to despair. This was starting to feel like a recurring nightmare, interviewing person after person, while all the time the memory of the dark-haired girl began to dissolve and shimmer, slipping through my fingers like water. The more faces I saw, each corresponding slightly but not completely to my memory, the harder I was finding it to hold on to the image in my head. And yet there was something defining about that girl, something I was sure I'd recognize if I saw again. It wasn't the features. They were pretty, but ordinary enough. It wasn't the hair or the Pink Floyd T-shirt. It was something about her, the sheer liveliness and vivacity of her expression as she had peered sharply out into the corridor, a surprise as she had seen my face. Was it really possible she was dead? But the alternative was not much better, because if she wasn't, the only other possibility, and suddenly I wasn't sure if it was better or worse, was that I was going mad.
Chapter 13 Ulla and Nilsson both excused themselves when my breakfast arrived, leaving me to stare out of the window as I ate. Up here, with a view of the sea and the deck, I didn't feel quite so sick, and I managed a respectable amount of breakfast, feeling the energy come back into my limbs and the nagging nausea abate. It struck me that at least half the reason I had been feeling so crap was probably low blood sugar. I always get strange and shaky on an empty stomach. But though the food and the sight of the ocean made me feel physically better, I could not stop running over last night's events in my head, replaying the conversation with the girl, the surprise on her face, the touch of irritation as she shoved the mascara into my hand. Something had been going on. I was sure of it. It felt like coming into a film halfway through, struggling.